'Tis sweet to trust in Jesus, just from sin and self to cease, just from Jesus simply taking life and rest and joy and peace. Jesus, Jesus, how I trust Him, how I've proved Him o'er and o'er. Jesus, Jesus, precious Jesus, oh, for grace to trust Him more. You may be seated.
All right, very good. John chapter 2, you can take your Bibles and turn there. And also we'll get set up here with looking at some geography. I trust that the geography is something that you enjoy. John chapter 2 is where we are at. All right, we're going to go ahead and review just for a moment. John, we have seen Jesus as he has gone to Cana and as he has done his first public miracle. And do any of you remember where Cana is at? If you're looking at a map, and we'll get the maps hopefully worked out here in just a minute. Cana, where would you, how would you describe where, the location of Cana? In Cana was something we don't know, 100% know. Exactly. Where would you describe Cana?
A little bit north of
Nazareth. Okay, a little bit north of Nazareth. What region are we talking about? Okay, we're in the region of Galilee. Okay, again, this Jesus did his earthly ministry. Much of it, he went all around, but a lot of it was in Galilee. And so let's go ahead and come in here to this location here. I've got a number of things pulled up, locations. As we look at the area as a whole, you can kind of see where Cana is. I know for some of you, it's kind of, well, I'm working on getting these things bigger. Seems like they change up all the time. I don't know why. Honestly, I don't know what's with the program. I use a Google Earth, and I will get on. Like, I got on this evening to get things ready for church, and some of the things weren't even on there. They just kind of change. So they had to put them on there real quick again, and then that changes the size of them. But we have Nazareth in right here, kind of in the center, and you can see how it's in the middle of, what is this body of water here on the left? Okay, the Mediterranean Sea, the Great Sea. And if you go to the right, what body of water is this? All right, the Sea of Galilee. Can you guys see this when I point? That's good, because I'm colorblind, and so I don't see it really well. Now, I can see it from where I'm at. I don't think there's any way I'd be able to see it from where you're at. So I was having doubts. I said, there's no way those people can see this. But you say, yes, you can see it, okay? That's good. All right, Nazareth. We think that Cana probably was in here. Now, we're going to come in here and zoom in. But do you see this spot here that's a little bit different? These are mountains. Okay, these are not big mountains, but they are mountains, not like Jerusalem. But you see this area here that's kind of one shade. That's a valley, okay? And I'm going to let you see that here in just a moment. There's a valley that's there. It's going to be significant in just a moment. So Jesus has been there in Cana, and it's where he... We see him turn the water into wine. We have looked at the significance of that. Saw a number of unique things that Jesus did there. And as we're in John chapter 2, I draw your attention to verse 11. is kind of where we wrapped up. This beginning of miracles did Jesus in Cana of Galilee and manifested forth his glory, and his disciples believed on him. Now that was what happened at Cana. I want you to jump to verse 12 now, and let's see after this. Again, John is a man, a writer of succession. You're going to hear lots of, and the next day, and this is what happened next. John takes a lot of note on the chronology of things. So we, after this, pretty right after that, right after he was there, he went, that's Jesus, went down to Capernaum, he and his mother and his brethren and his disciples, and they continued there not many days. Now, if you jump ahead to verse 13, he's going to be on his way to Jerusalem. But we have one verse right here that tells us a little tiny section, just a little segment of his life. After this, he went down to Capernaum. Now, sometimes when we think of down, what do we, you know, immediately, what do we think of when we think of down? Sometimes we think south. You know, when I think of down, when I'm looking at the maps, I'm thinking, oh, he took off from Cana and headed this way. What do you think he's talking about here? He's in the mountains and he's going down, okay? He's going down in elevation. Because as you look on the map here, Capernaum is not down south. Capernaum is right here on the northern side of the Sea of Galilee, okay? There is Capernaum. And we're going to learn just a little bit about Capernaum. I'm going to let you see some pictures based upon the technology if it's working tonight. But here we have Cana to Capernaum. Cana to Capernaum was about 18 miles, give or take, depending on where Cana was. We do know where Capernaum was, but again, Cana is a little bit of a question. If it's about where we have it, it's going to be in between 15 and 20 miles away. So Jesus, his mother Mary, his brothers, and his disciples, they take off from Cana and they head there approximately 18 miles and they go to Capernaum. How long are they there? It seems like only a few days because it says just a few days and then they left. Okay? And so it says they continued there not many days. So they were there a few days. Let's look just a little bit. I'm not going to try my hand at flying anymore. So let's just go down here. And some of you got sick when we flew into Jerusalem. All right, you kind of see down here in Cana, here's the city. Again, if this was Cana, this is Cana. It's a different name today. But let me just move this. I want to get the change of perspective here. All right, here, if this is Cana, I want to come in just a little bit, and let's flatten this out. I want you to look to see in perspective of where we are headed. Okay, now do you see off in the distance the Sea of Galilee there? All right, okay, so now we've turned, and if we're looking down overhead of Cana, now we are looking westward in direction. Eastward, excuse me. We're looking eastward in direction. A little bit north, maybe. But as you can see there. Now, I want to come in just a little bit closer because I want you to see what this trip would look like. Again, you say, Pastor, why do you show us? Because I think it's just good to see that this is a real-life situation. This is what they did. Okay, so Jesus and his mother, his brethren, and his disciples are somewhere here in this location. And so they take off, most likely. They probably didn't cross over mountains to come over here. They probably, and again, I don't know this, but it seems as though, you see the steeper mountain here to the south? Probably they're going to come down through this valley and make their way over. And they're going to start to come down now here, as you can see some roads in there, at least modern day roads. Some mounts, there's a few foothills around just outside the Sea of Galilee now. You can start to see Capernaum coming up. And it's going to get beginning lower and lower in elevation as we come in here. Let me come in here and let's look at the northern perspective here. Okay, now we're looking kind of like we would north. Here we see the Sea of Galilee. I want you to see, now this is a, this is not obviously a live picture, but this is what Capernaum looks like today. Now, what are you looking for? That's not, doesn't seem like it's there. Where's the city, right? There's not much there. Okay, I don't know how how big Capernaum was in that day. Obviously, it was a little bit bigger than this. But here's just a very small place of Capernaum. You say, what is there this day? I want to pop out of Google Earth here, and I just want to show you some pictures. Now, this is what it would look like. This is what it would look like today, and this is just from a website that I want to show you. Let me give you the first picture that is here. And you can see some different things here. Honestly, this is just a very small area. I'm going to show you. I think that I can do this. I think we can come in just a little bit closer to give you perspective of things. You can see the parking lots here. Okay, that would give you the size of that would where a car would fit in there. So now you can kind of see how big this place is. Let's go ahead and start to the left here. You see these old ruined walls that are here. Okay, these are walls from Capernaum way back in the day. Jesus, I think that's kind of neat. Something we're seeing, and people that would tour Israel would maybe go see that. Did you see Capernaum? Do you remember? Okay. Does it look familiar at all when we look at this? Yeah, okay. Well, this picture's not taken too long ago, but there's ruins, you know, right in here. Some old walls. You can see they're not that big. You know, it looks like some of the, if you look in perspective of the parking lot size, it looks like a lot of these rooms are about the size of maybe a car, and not that very big, but lots of rooms, a lot of rooms in here that you see. And, you know, this is old Capernaum, and just right there by the sea. And so I don't have a lot of things to tell you about this. I'm going to show you some more pictures here in just a moment that will help us here. Again, this is old Capernaum, some places of worship that are there, and some things that people have set aside. Let's go back just a little bit. Again, this is a it's just a website that I found that talked about this. Let me go to some more pictures. Here's a synagogue that is there, a place of worship. And then, of course, you see a little bit closer some of the ruins that are there from some of the walls. Obviously been there for a very, very long time. Again, I'm just going to kind of flip through some pictures. More of the same. Earlier parts of the synagogue that were still there, and these would be from Jesus' time. Here's some more of the ruins. You see the wall. I don't know if you remember when we were looking at the big picture, there's kind of a wall around the old part of the city. More ruins. Kind of small pictures for you to see. Some of the ruins are underneath glass here. All right, that's about it for that. Back to Capernaum here. And so here we have this place, you know, that Jesus went and just a small place. Do we know why Jesus went to Capernaum? Not really at this time. Now we would understand what was going to happen in Jesus' earthly ministry here in these last 2.5, 3 years of his life. What would his own people do with Jesus? They would reject him. They would push him aside. You know, Jesus is not one of us. And certainly out of Nazareth wouldn't happen. Capernaum is going to become one of his home bases here in the region of Galilee. He's going to frequently come back to Capernaum. And not necessarily his home, but he's going to travel back here and be here for, it's going to be a hit and miss, back to Capernaum going there. So he takes a few days here to be with his disciples. We don't know why, it's not recorded. And then he is going to take off and he is going to head south to Jerusalem, okay? It is the time of the Passover. How many miles is it going to be from Capernaum to Jerusalem? It's going to be about 80 miles if you would draw a straight line right through the Sea of Galilee and go right to Jerusalem. So as the crow flies, it's going to be 80 miles, probably going around the sea, and then depending on whether he went through the valley, straight through the mountains, it's, you know, it could be 85-mile journey of what he is going to go through with his family, with his disciples as he leaves. And so there we see, and after this, verse 13, and the Jews' Passover was at hand, and Jesus went, and here we have another descriptive word, up to Jerusalem. Okay? Why is it up? Again, because of elevation. Jerusalem is in the mountains. And so he takes 85 miles and he goes, and you can see Jerusalem is not even, at least the temple part of it is not even in the rugged part of it, of Jerusalem. You see just to the western part, even more rugged, but certainly mountains here. And so from the Sea of Galilee, he's going to travel up and he's going to go into Jerusalem. Why did he go to Jerusalem? And guys, we can be done with we're done with the geography now, so you can go ahead and take that off. And let's look in our Bibles here. Why did he go up to Jerusalem? I want you to notice first of all that he went up to celebrate Passover. As we look at the Passover, it was a time. Why was the Passover instituted? What were the Jews going to celebrate? Okay, what was that?
Deliverance
from Egypt, their freedom. They were delivered from Egypt and they were commanded, but they were also wanted to. They wanted to celebrate this time where they were delivered from Egypt and they were free to go and worship Jehovah, free to worship God. And so we remember back to that time, and these people certainly, they would remember back to the time when God delivered them from Egypt. And so Jesus is going there. And they're going to take this time of celebration and worship God because of that. You know, it's interesting, just a side note there, but Jesus is coming in, you know, and Jesus knew this, and maybe some of his disciples had started to hear, and certainly people that paid attention to you know, the prophets of old knew that there was one that was going to come to be their deliverer. They were looking for a physical deliverer. They were looking for a king. They were looking for somebody that was going to lead them that way. But it is interesting just to take note, you know, Jesus is going here to celebrate Passover, but thinking in mind what was going to take place here very soon in just a couple years. It would be more than deliverance from Egypt. It would be deliverance from what or who? Deliverance from sin, deliverance from the power of Satan, deliverance from eternal damnation in the lake of fire, hell. You know, just the thoughts that Jesus Christ had as he was going there to worship in Passover. Kind of interesting thought way. Celebrate deliverance. Celebrate deliverance. You know, at this time, the temple was used for, I say the temple, Jerusalem, right now is used for a lot of things. The temple is used for so much. You know, as Jesus went there, you know, why is it so important that he would celebrate, you know, this deliverance? You know, Jesus knew that something greater was going to come. There would be a different deliverance that would take place. You know, what is most important I want you to think about the Passover in the celebration, the remembering. Now, we don't have the Passover today. What do we do to remember not the deliverance of Egypt, but our deliverance that Jesus Christ came to this earth to die on the cross? What is our time of remembrance?
Lord's Supper.
You know, this was very special. The Passover is special to the Jews during this time. Ought the Lord's Supper be very special to us? You know, it ought to be a very special time for us. And as we meet and as we remember what Jesus Christ has done for us, you know, they went all out. And I'm not saying that we need to go all out and do all kinds of things, but I'll tell you, it ought to mean something to us. Now, let me stop, and just as a pastor, I want to help you understand something, because a lot of people are misunderstanding. What is the special thing about the Lord's table, the Lord's Supper? What is it? It's our remembrance, right? Now, do we have the elements that we pass around? We have the bread, which, by the way, what does the bread represent? The broken bread represents the broken body of Jesus Christ on the cross. That physical taking the place of our penalty. He went there on the cross. What else do we have? We have the cup, the juice. And what does that represent for us? Okay, his blood and the washing away of our sins and giving us that righteousness. The special things. Now we have the elements. And I ask you, what is most important? The elements or the identification and the remembering? Here's where people get confused. I've heard of people, you know, requesting, maybe some elderly people in, you know, their latter days, you know, they're in a hospital and they want to partake of, and they will say, can somebody from the church bring me the juice or bring me some bread? Now, initially you might say, well, what's wrong with that? They want to remember. I guess there's nothing wrong with that in a sense, but this was an institution for the church. And for it was a group of people to identify. We at Faith Bible Church are identifying with what Jesus Christ has done for us on the cross. That's the significance, and us remembering what Jesus has done. Folks, there isn't anything special in that juice. There's not anything special about that wafer, that bread, except for the fact that it's representing and just causing us to remember what Jesus Christ had done. And so just understand that obviously it's the identification, it's the remembering. We need to continually be celebrating what Jesus has done for us on the cross and our deliverance from hell, sin, and this present world of darkness. And so it was a time of remembering, and it's certainly important for us to remember what Jesus Christ has done for us. You know, I think if Jesus traveled 85 miles on foot to be there for Passover, we should make an effort to be here to remember what Jesus Christ has done for us. Folks, I think it ought to be more than just when the church is meeting for the Lord's Supper. I think it ought to be as often as we can to remember and to be a part of what God has given to us every time the doors are open. If we can, make it here to worship the Lord. But I want you to see something else, the focus on what we're going to look at this evening in this passage. We see that he went to purify the temple there. And I know he went for the main purpose of worship. And what did he find, though? Jesus knew what was going to happen here. He was God. He would come to this place and there was going to be some problems. What did Jesus find when he got to the temple? Now, before you answer that, let's think through it. What would the temple atmosphere be like when Jesus arrived? Do you think that people, you know, just a few people walking the streets? Do you think it was quiet? Do you think it was solemn? Folks, I want to tell you something. It was a big deal. There was celebration. It wasn't quiet. It was loud. There was animals. There were people. There was preparations. There were travelers. They were trying to find places to stay. They were getting their animals ready. They were meeting up with old time friends. There was a lot of things going on in this city during this time, and so Jesus comes, and you know the focus. What was the focus? Let's look back in this passage. We're looking in John chapter 2, and now we're in verse 13. Jesus and the Jews, Passover was at hand, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem What did he find there? And found in the temples those that sold oxen and sheep and doves and the changers of money sitting. And so he goes up there and he finds all kinds of things that people were doing to make their profit. I mean, if it's time for Passover and people are going to need what? They're going to need some lambs, right? Well, I'm going to bring my lambs there, and so people can buy this. Well, certainly people are going to need this, and they're going to need this. Isn't it just kind of like what you see today? You know, there's a big event, and so everybody comes with their cart or their wagon, and they're going to sell. They're going to capitalize on what is taking place. And no doubt, these people had a good opportunity to capitalize on what was taking place. And people were selling all kinds of things there in the temple. Let me ask you a question. What was the temple made for? Worship of God. And Jesus shows up on the scene, and all the focus was on the attempt of personal gain in this place of worship. You know, the Jews were taking a good thing. Wow, it's good. This is Passover. This is time to offer sacrifices. This is time to remember. This is time to worship God. They were taking this good thing and twisting it for the benefit of themselves. What can I get out of this time for myself? You know, the sole purpose of the celebration was to focus on God and his goodness. And I want you to notice the pathway that we look here as Jesus comes here. The pathway of consecration, of setting aside for just God. You know, it ought to appall us today to use God's house for anything else but his glory. It ought to be a shame to us. Now, let me ask you a question. Was it appalling to Jesus when he showed up to the temple to see all that was going on besides worship? Oh, he said, no way. This cannot be. God has not made it for that. Notice in verse 16, he says, take these things hence. Make not, whose house was it? And yes, and what does it say? Take not my Father's house and house of merchandise. You know what he's saying there? He says, no, this is my Father's house. This is not a house of merchandise. Folks, did you hear that? God's house is not a house of merchandise. It's why we want to be very careful to use this time, this place, this building to do anything where we're gaining. You know, we don't want to bring our business into this church and to sell things and use it. And folks, I think that the church has gotten very relaxed on it. That we can use this place to do. I remember when I was growing up, and I think I've given this illustration to you before, that I was involved in little people's wrestling. You know, we called it peewee wrestling back in Wyoming. I was involved in that. It was a big deal. It just seemed like all the kids did that. And my parents, you know, ran me through that as well. And I did that. And one of the things that we had to do is we had to sell sun-kissed oranges. You know, kind of like every little group that's out there, you sell these things, you're trying to make profit, and it's for the league, it's for the, you know, group of wrestlers. You know, you get anything. And of course, if you sell a certain amount, you get this catalog when you first start, and there's all kinds of neat things in there. If I will sell this amount of boxes, I can get this. If I can sell this amount of boxes, I'll get this. I'll tell you, I was never a good one at that. I didn't care about those dumb toys in that magazine. I didn't really care about going out and asking somebody. I would never make a good salesman. I don't want to put someone on the spot like that. And so I never got hardly anything of that. But what we did do, you know, it was kind of one of these things that we were expected to do something. And so we would ask relatives, hey, Grandma and Grandpa, would you like to buy a box of oranges? You know, we had hit the relatives. You know, and the thought came to mind, of course, what about all the people in church? But I want to tell you something. My parents never allowed me to take my slip to church and go around and ask people if they wanted to buy oranges for wrestling. Why? Why did my parents think that was important? I want to tell you something. It comes from right here. We want to make sure we don't use God's house for anything but what? Worship, folks. And I think we've gotten relaxed in this. Now, we stop and say, you know what, Pastor, I don't bring my packing slip for oranges here. I'm going to tell you something. What do we use God's house, though, for? You know, you give any given building tonight. Well, there's a lot of places that are empty tonight because they don't have evening services any longer. But I tell you what, let's just say they were having services. I'll tell you what, you go into any number of services and there's a lot of other extracurricular activities going on there besides church. You know what, I used to, and I can't say I do anymore. I love to play sports. I used to love sports. I want to tell you something. I think it's appalling to get together and all, you know, people after the service sit out there in the foyer and just talk about sports. I don't think God is pleased with that. I don't think God is pleased. This is a place of worship. Jesus went there, and what did he do? He saw those tables and he turned them over. Would you say that he had a passion for what he was doing? Folks, this was a big deal to Jesus. He didn't walk in there and, you know, and go to the guy at the table and say, you know what, I just don't know if this is the best thing. No, he walked over to that table and he flipped it over. He says, listen, you need to go. This is my Father's house. This is not your house of merchandise. This is not the meaning of this place. God meant this building to worship. God meant this place for his worship. God meant this place for him and nothing else. And what I just think a lot of times we bring, I'm not saying it's wrong that we can talk about, you know, what's going on this week, but I want to tell you something. The focus of this place in this house ought to be on the person of God and his worship. It ought not be the sale of things. It not be for our personal gain. And let's take it a step further. You know, some people dress up so wild and crazy to go to church and they want everybody to notice them. Ladies, I want to tell you something. If the goal to come to church is for people to notice you, I believe this is talking about the same thing. I think it's idolatry. It's just like putting up an idol right here in front of church. How dare we do that? You know what? Who ought to be the focus when we come to God's house? God. And if I'm trying to get focused, if my goal, young ladies, listen to this. You know, and it could be the young men too. Everybody listen to this. If we, before we come to church, I'm not saying it's wrong to use a mirror, but if we get there and we're just sitting there thinking about what other people are going to think about, we are guilty of what Jesus Christ condemned right here. Because we're thinking, boy, I wonder if people can look at me, or if people think that I'm this. And we go and we steal the show. I want to tell you what, when we come to this house, there ought to be one person that is on our heart and on our mind. And if anything else, when they leave, how good did I make God look today? That ought to be the focus. When we talk to people, we ought to be promoting God. How can I make God look good, and how can I help you get to him? Folks, we have so much help and encouragement to give to other people. Why would we come and spend it talking about who won the game this afternoon, or who's going to, you know, if we get home really quick, we can see the fourth quarter. You know what? There's nothing necessarily in and of itself wrong with that game, but I tell you what, it ought not be talked about here. I don't think God is pleased when we come to his house and we make this a place where we are the focus, or things of this earth are the focus. It ought to be God. This is God's temple. It's not our temple. You know, we can make another application, though. Our bodies are God's temple as well. You know, yes, this temple was a place of worship. Yes, this church is a place of worship. And we ought to be very careful not to bring anything else that honors, you know, if it does not honor and glorify God, it ought not be in this building. I'll tell you what. What do we find in 1 Corinthians chapter 6? What does it tell us in verse 19? What? Know ye not that what is the temple? Your body is the temple. Wow. Jesus went into the temple and he saw them using God's temple for their purpose, for their gain, for their pleasure. And what was his response? He hated it. He did not hate the people. He hated the sin. He hated that idolatry that was taking place. Who wants, and who should be, who ought to be, the preeminence inside this temple? It ought to be God. And yet, how many of us are using this temple for our own personal gain? You know what? Isn't it amazing how God gave us the human body? Oh, and we have a lot of weaknesses and fleshly, you know, some of you know more than others, you know, your weaknesses and your body, and it's giving out. But I want to tell you something. The body is an amazing, amazing machine that God has made. And why did he make such an amazing body? Go ahead. For his glory. What do you think God's attitude is? What do you think Jesus' attitude is? By the way, Jesus is in this temple. What do you think his thoughts are when he sees us using this body for our advancement, for our glory. Look at who I am. Look at what I can accomplish. And I'm going to do this so other people will praise me. What do you think God thinks? You know, a picture comes to my mind. This ought not to be. Get out. Get these things out of here. They don't belong here. I want to tell you something. I don't think that Jesus is just going to simply come up. The message tonight is not for you and say, you know, sir, I just don't think that. I don't think that that ought to be in your life because that's not bringing me glory. Folks, Jesus is saying, get them out of here. I don't want that in this temple. Anything that's going to defile your temple before a holy God is not right. Everything in my life, can I look at it and say, hey, this is for God's honor and glory. This is for His honor and glory. I want God to look good. I want to tell you something. I was convicted so much of this. I, growing up, was all about myself and in the football and the weightlifting, and I wanted to build my body up. I want to tell you, it was nothing more than pure idolatry. Because I wanted people to look at me and not God. You know what? If I'm doing something for myself, then it's wrong. I'm putting myself above God. Folks, we cannot be guilty of that. What is going on in your life? What do you have? Everything, your dress, the way you do your hair, the way you put on whatever this, and the way you make yourself, the way you act and what you do with your body, every single element of it ought to be given to what? The honor and glory of God. And His message to us tonight is, if there's anything, if there's a table, if there's a booth, if there's a wagon, if there's anything there that is not bringing God honor and glory, He says, get it out! Folks, I want to tell you something. If God's convicting your heart tonight about something, get it out. He's not messing around with this. As I read this passage, you read, is He messing around? He says, no way. This ought not to be, folks. It ought not to be in this building. It not ought to be anything else but honor and glory to God. And it ought not to be anything in this house that does not bring honor and glory to God. I want to ask you a question. I want you to analyze yourself. What is in your body, in your life right now that is not honor and glorifying God? That you could not take it and put it right on Christ and say, you know what? Right here, this is matching up. This is matching up with Christ. If it doesn't match up, it ought to go. If it doesn't match up, it ought to go. What an amazing thing that we see here in this passage. Bringing God honor and glory, certainly not for ourselves. Romans 12, 1 and 2 says, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. Be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Jesus came in, He took it away. You know, was He angry? I want to tell you something, He was extremely serious about it. John chapter 2 and verse 17, just a couple of verses. And His disciples remembered that it was written. This is right after they watched this. You know, Jesus goes in there and he turns over these tables and He tells them about that they shouldn't be in their Father's house doing this, you know, as a house of merchandise. His disciples remembered that it was written, the zeal of thine house hath eaten me up. Going back to Psalm chapter 69 and verse 9, something that David, for the zeal of thine house hath eaten me up, and the reproaches of them that reproach thee are fallen upon me. He took it up Himself. This was a big deal to Jesus. As I close, I want to say it ought to be a big deal for us. And I'll tell you, this zeal that He had for the house of God ultimately led to His death. You know, this was one of the first times as He went and did that, there was a group of religious people that stood over there on the side in the aisles. And they say, how dare this man do this? Look what he's doing. He wants it for himself. And he would die because of this. The question, was it passionate? Was Jesus passionate about this? It was a big deal. It sent Him to the cross. If Jesus was sent to the cross because of this wickedness, folks, it ought to be a big deal for us. Right here, be careful. Again, please, don't walk out of here thinking, boy, I don't want Pastor to hear me ask about the weather this week. Is it for God's glory? Is it for your own glory? What's the focus? Can God be honored through it or not? I'll tell you what, I believe we can talk about what the weather's going to be and bring God glory, but I think we can talk about the weather and not bring God glory as well. God knows the hearts, and he knows what's going on. So just be careful. Again, it doesn't mean that there's anything wrong when we go out and cannot talk about anything, but God, we better be very careful. This is God's house. This is his place of worship. This is God's house. This is his place of worship. Let's make it consistent with this. Father, I thank you so much for what Jesus Christ leads us here. He travels up to Jerusalem, and we see as his public ministry is just getting started here, and we see his heart come out. He doesn't want anything in the way of the Father. Lord, I pray that in our lives we don't have anything in the way, and anything in the way of us and the Father. Lord, I pray that you'd help us. Help us. Lord, tonight, if there's anybody that has recognized some things that gets in the way that we're using for our own gain and not God's gain, Lord, I pray that we would say, no, we don't need that. We got to get rid of that. We got to move on. We got to worship God. Lord, if there's people like that, I pray that tonight they'd get those things right. Get them out of their lives. Lord, make a difference. Tonight, in Jesus' name we pray.